Jason. Sorry. All right, thank you. Good afternoon. This is an informal hearing on how many cases, Victor, on this first one?
First one is two cases, PU 22-19 and PU 22-27.
Perfect. Thank you. Let's see. It is the 23rd of February of 2022. I'm Commissioner Julie Fedorchak, and I'm joined by Commissioners Randy Christman and Sherry Hogan Huffert. Sherry's first informal, so we're pleased to have you here. Welcome. I don't have any opening comments, and usually we kind of turn this over to the portfolio holder once we get to that point. So do either of you have opening comments?
Well, I'll just say, for to try and make things not seem quite so confusing on these two cases, and I haven't spent a lot of time, I wanted to wait till the informal, but bottom line is number 19 is for the rider on two different wind farms on Ashtabula that they seek to acquire, and Maricourt having to do with how we take into consideration the production tax credits. And then 22-27, that is just on Ashtabula again, but that's about the CPCN, the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity, to acquire that wind farm. And they get power from there now through a contract, but this would be for them to buy it. And so that's why we're talking about the same wind farm in two cases here.
Okay. Sherry, any opening comments? Okay. Very good. Then, let's see here. This is an information hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts as we proceed, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. We'll go around the room and introduce ourselves. We've already introduced ourselves up here. Start with you, Brian.
Brian Johnson, PSC staff.
Victor Shook, PSC staff.
Stuart Tomerdahl, Otter Tail Power Company.
William Rader, Otter Tail Power Company.
All right. Any other folks?
We do have, I believe, three people on the line. Randy Sinslin, who's our manager of renewable development. Harvey McMahon, our manager of renewable energy construction operations. And then Carrie Stephenson, our associate general counsel.
Okay. And Bruce Gerhardson is in the room as well.
Bruce is here as well.
Okay. Let's see. So I think we've got all the formalities done in the informal hearing. The applicant goes first. And I think at this point we could just turn it over to you guys, Stuart or William.
Yep.
I don't know who's
yep.
taking
I'll
the lead.
I'll be leading this one.
Okay.
So thank you,
perfect.
Commissioner. And again, thank you for the opportunity to be here and to help you understand these dockets and address the questions that you may have. And special welcome to the new commissioner. One of the things that we thought would be important maybe for your benefit is it'd give you a little bit of an OTP overview. So we did include three slides with just some information, general information about Otter Tail. Well, the way we have the presentation kind of broken down is you know, we'll kind of highlight the summary of the requests that are included in both of these dockets or these cases. Then we'll focus on the CPCN case first, just a few slides about that acquisition of Ashtabula. Then we'll transition to the renewable rider case, so that's the second half of this presentation that we'll walk through this afternoon. And certainly as we're going through the presentation, you know, ask questions, and we'll address them. So if we want to move on to slide four, this is a company overview slide that kind of gives you both a little bit of a visual perspective of Otter Tail as well as just some statistics. If you look at the shaded areas there in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota, that's the 70,000 mile square mile, you know, service territory that we serve, but it's really the small towns that are located within that service territory. And so, you know, across our entire system, we've got about 133,000 customers now, spread across 422 different communities. The map, as you look at the map, you know, you'll see our different generation sources represented on there, whether it's our baseload units, you know, peaking units, various wind farms that we either own or have PPAs with, and then also the green dots reflect where our customer service centers are located throughout our system. And we operate, you know, we operate as one system across all three jurisdictions. Our average population in our communities is about 400 people, 422 communities that we serve. So a lot of small towns that we serve. Got about 785 employees across the company, of which a couple hundred are in North Dakota. I should mention, you know, from a customer perspective, we say we have about 133,000, about 59,000 of those are in North Dakota, from a customer perspective. So a nice little visual on, you know, kind of where we're located and who we serve and the communities that we serve in that area. We'll move on to slide five. Again, focusing on the community populations, you know, 93% in North Dakota of our communities have less than 1,000 people. And basically across all our system, you know, we've got, you know, 90% of our communities are smaller than 1,000. So kind of gives you just the mental geography of our customer base that we serve. And then we'll move on to slide, the next slide. Just to give you a little bit of perspective where you saw the generation resources on the first map, as of 2021, this was the resource mix for Otter Tail, roughly about 53% from our baseload coal units, 31% from our renewable resources, whether it's what's owned or PPAs. About 4% from our gas and oil units, and then about 12% from the market.
And that's energy, not capacity.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Yep. That's our energy mix.
What percent of that renewable is wind versus solar?
Our solar right now is very small.
Okay. We've so got it's almost 100%.
Yeah. Yep.
Or wind. Okay.
Yep.
Also, sorry, Stuart, one more. What percent of that wind is in North Dakota?
All of our wind is in
all of it.
Dakota. Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, yeah, maybe some could be some small.
Okay, not all the wind.
So just to kind of summarize the requests that we've put forth in these two cases, first with the CPCN, you know, we're asking the commission to issue the CPCN, authorizing us to acquire, own, and operate and maintain purchase assets and approve the proposed acquisition of the Ashtabula 3 wind farm. And we'll see as we go through, you know, the presentation and talk a little bit about the economics and what was reflected in the filing, that we see that as a beneficial long-term to our customers. And the timing is certainly appropriate under the contract that we currently have with that wind farm. We'll talk a little bit about the renewable rider, but basically our request there will be to, you know, get approval of the recovery of you know, the farm, this farm, and the updated costs that are included in the Maricourt or in the renewable rider. And we're actually going to be seeing a reduction in our rate, dropping from about 11.825% down to 7.1%. And we'll talk through the specifics of what's making up the revenue requirement and why some of the we're seeing the reductions in the renewable rider as we go through the presentation. Okay, we'll move on to first talking about the purchase of the Ashtabula 3 wind farm, which we submitted the application in case PU 22-27. Just to give you a little bit of background, we entered into this PPA back in 2013, and in the contract there was a purchase option that would allow us to acquire the facility at the 10-year mark of that contract, which is in 2023. If we didn't exercise that option, then Otter Tail would continue to operate with taking the energy through the PPA. Last July, we did enter into a purchase and sale agreement, which was obviously subject to commission approval, but have initiated the process of the acquisition of the facility. And upon getting all the appropriate regulatory approvals, we'd be looking at closing on the purchase at the beginning of 2023 in January. A little bit more about Ashtabula 3, and your handout says 39 Vestas. They're actually GE turbines on this facility, so I wanted to make sure that got corrected in your handout. We had it corrected on the presentation there, but it's a 62.4 megawatt facility that we would be acquiring. It would include all of the land rights that come with it, the substation assets, applicable licenses and permits necessary for us to, to assume ownership and operation of the facility. I think another important aspect of acquiring it too is inherent is the generator or the transmission interconnection that will come, and allow that to have access to the transmission system through ownership of that facility.
Is it connecting? Do you own the transmission lines already that it uses?
I believe it's part of it is through Minn Kota. Randy or Harvey can answer that question.
Phone a friend.
Yeah, this is Randy Sinstolen. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. The interconnection, one of the agreements that comes with this is going to be the LGIA, the Large Generator Interconnection Agreement, and that interconnection agreement is with Minn Kota Power Systems.
Okay. How far away does it connect, the line to connect to the Minn Kota system? How long is that?
Well, this is part of a group of wind farms in the Luverne, Ashtabula area, and they all have an interconnection at the Maple River substation, which is west of Fargo.
Yeah. All right, and then this includes the line to get to that substation. This purchase.
It includes the rights to be able to use that line. Correct.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
I'm going to touch a little bit on some of the economics on page 11 of the handout, and then I'm going to turn it over to Randy to kind of walk through page 12. But just to kind of, summarize, right now our customers are, obviously paying for the output of the Ashtabula 3 wind farm through the PPA, and that's being run through our energy adjustment rider. And so what's happening is through the acquisition, that would in a sense shift recovery out of the energy adjustment rider. So that output would be at zero cost, so we'd see a reduction or a negative impact to, or it's a positive by reducing the you know, the energy costs that would roll through the energy adjustment rider. And then, you know, assuming approval of, you know, recovery, that recovery would you know, happen through the renewable rider. And Randy will talk a little bit more about the analysis, but you know, looking at the levelized costs of ownership with us purchasing at this point in time relative to maintaining or continuing the PPA, you know, we're estimating about a $4.56 megawatt hour per megawatt hour benefit to our customers. So it would be cheaper to own long term versus what the PPA would require us to pay. And Randy, if you want to kind of walk through.
Before you do that, Stuart, yep. Did, based on that amount, have you calculated out what the total savings would be? Projected.
I did have that. Based on the output of the plant, I don't have it right at my fingertips, but
okay. Something you can get us.
We can get you. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Stuart, on a previous page, you mentioned when this facility went into production, and you have a purchase, an option to purchase in 2023.
Correct.
But that doesn't mean that your power purchase agreement is expiring, right? So your option is to purchase the facility or continue the PPA, right?
Yep, that's one or the other.
I guess when you said that about how this would save money as opposed to keeping the contract, I was thinking, well, shouldn't we be comparing it to what other things might be available? But really, you're locked into a contract, so
correct.
The comparison is between purchasing it or continuing.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Randy, do you want to walk through slide 12?
I sure can. Slide 12 is just meant to be a way to picture those two options there, one being the continuing with the power purchase agreement, which would be the red line, and or the ownership option, which would be the purple line on this graph, and so with the red line, you can kind of see where the, you know, it starts out in this case 2023, and then continues to escalate through the life of the power purchase agreement, which would end in 2037. And then the purple line representing the ownership, and again, this is meant on a per megawatt hour basis from the output of the wind farm, and you can see how the purple line declines over the life, and we did include at the end of it the cash flow look of the decommissioning costs at the end. And the punchline then ends up being on those two horizontal lines, which is the gray and the blue, which is the levelized look between the two, showing the ownership being more cost effective for our customers. And I'll just point out some of those assumptions that are listed on there, where the project cost being $51 million, and then the net capacity factor is based on our historical output from the project, the six-year average of 40%, and then using a 25-year remaining life, which would bring through the end of 2047. and then we assume $2.5 million of operations and maintenance costs as part of that equation.
So I don't see anything on this timeline for any repowering or anything that even shows a blip in maintenance. And
correct.
I never understood years ago, at least 10-year-old wind farms, I never heard discussion of a 35-year lifespan. You know, we heard 25, some 30. Is it realistic to think that this is going to be running yet in 2047 or 48 without a pretty big capital expense somewhere along the line?
Well, as part of the $2.5 million, we have about 800,000 for component type failures that would take place on an annual basis. And that's meant to, you know, your gearboxes and generator failures that would take place in a natural course of that. But as far as complete repowering, we don't have in this analysis any anticipated complete repower.
And what was that amount per year that you have built in?
$800,000 per year.
Is that based on your experience with other similar turbine models, or where did you come up with that figure?
You know, I'm gonna defer that question. I'll do a phone a friend for with Harvey McMahon on this one.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, it is. You know, we have the Langdon Wind Farm, which is 27 turbines. And then we have the Ashtabula wind farm at 32 turbines, and then the Laverne turbine or wind farm at 33 turbines. The Ashtabula 3 turbines are very similar to our to all three sites, but mostly similar to the Laverne site with 33 turbines. And so if you look at it on a per turbine basis, we would anticipate between $500,000 and $600,000 a year with a 10-year-old farm. And for this farm, and so as we're looking at it, we put in $800,000 flat over the life, which is for the analysis, which is more than what we would need right away, and probably less than what we would need in the future.
So
it's kind of an average of what we would need over the next 25 years.
I might have missed something. Did you say $600,000 per turbine?
I'm sorry. It's $500,000 to $600,000 total, but we came up with that number based on our existing wind farms and what we anticipated on a per turbine basis. So $500,000 to $600,000 total per year for this.
I see.
For this more wind farm.
And you're allocating 800, so more at the beginning and less at the end.
Yep, just to
average.
Flatten it over the life.
Got it. What sort of unanticipated problems could you have that make this less favorable looking?
You know, obviously any major component failures beyond that would make it less favorable. So for instance, the blades, if we have more blade failures than you anticipate, or gearbox failures, generators have been pretty rock solid with these wind farms, but so have blades and gearboxes. So we anticipate a certain amount of failures every year, and we also anticipate, as part of that $2.5 million, doing maintenance on the blades as well, which we have started doing on our existing wind farms as well.
Okay.
And that, again, will extend the life over the, over the 25 to 30 years.
So to get the blades to last that 35 years, you've established a maintenance program, because they they don't, they aren't expected to last that long, correct?
Not all of them, no. But I mean, all of our turbines are, I think, 12 to 13, 14 years old now. And I believe we've had 3 blade failures total. But what we are doing is we are doing blade repairs. Probably we're averaging 27 blade repairs a year, which are much, much less costly. And with that, we anticipate you'll be going through every blade every 10 years from on a maintenance perspective at the $10,000 to $12,000 range versus having more and more blade failures. And blade failures are in the about $150,000 to $200,000 range.
Okay. I have a question. This is Commissioner Haugen-Huffert. If you have a complete blade failure and you're looking at some of these wind farms being older, is that blade still being manufactured? Or the supplies?
Yeah, the answer to that is yes and no. There's 2 different types of blades that we have. We have Texas blades, which are not manufactured. And then you have LM blades, which is out of Grand Forks and Arkansas. And I believe they're just out of Grand Forks now. And they don't make this blade anymore, but they do have the molds. And so what we've done is we bought 6 blades for our wind farms. And so when you have a blade failure, you use one of those blades. But if you have a Texas blade failure, you're going to have to use 3 of the LM blades because you can't mix and match the Texas and LM blades. There's too much of a weight difference. And so then if a Texas blade fails, you use all 3 of your LM blades to replace all the blades, but then you have 2 Texas blades that can be used for any Texas failure in the future. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So what, for the blade, you know, useful life, what kind of experience do you have, or industry, does the industry have in showing once you've repaired these blades, you know, they last as long as you're suggesting? Of all the pieces, those are what go out, and so you're estimating they're going to last 35 years, but if there's a single point of failure in that plan, it probably is the blades, right?
Well, we just have had so few blade failures, and the wear point on the blades is your leading edge, because that's what's hitting the rain, the sleet, the snow, any dust in the air, and so you get most of your damage to the leading edge. And so one of the things that we've done 3 years ago, we implemented a drone program where we're doing analysis on every one of the blades every year. And then any of the, what we call category three or category four damage to the leading edge, we're fixing that prior to catastrophic failures. And that's how we're able to maintain the integrity of the blades. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that as these wind farms are getting older, the blade manufacturers and owners who want to own these things for long periods of time are putting more effort into maintaining the blades, since it is a wear component within a wind tower.
Mm-hmm. Well, you haven't had failures yet, but they aren't that old. I mean, you're 15 or 12 to 15 years is a lot different than 30 or 35 year old pieces of equipment. So I don't have a lot of comfort just because you haven't had a lot of blade failures in the first 10 to 15 years. personally, but I don't know if there's other older farms that you've looked at nationally that can prove that out.
You know, there are older farms, but it's a so much different technology. The blades are smaller. So, you know, I mean, these are some of the first, I think in North Dakota, one of the first wind farms that came out was Edgely, and that came out in 2002. And so that's now 20 years old. And, you know, and they haven't had a rash of blade failures either. But I mean, beyond that, I don't know that there are a lot of these GE turbines out there of this size before that.
All right.
We did a phone a friend and figured out the output of the facility is about 200,000 megawatt hours a year. So at 450 roughly savings per megawatt hour, it's about 900,000 annually.
Okay.
That would be the math. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Stuart.
I guess that kind of ends this portion of the you know, the presentation with regard to the Ashtabula acquisition, and so, you know, again, we feel that the application and the supporting documentation demonstrates that public convenience and necessity is served by Otter Tail's acquisition and operation of this facility, and again, that's the request of Otter Tail before you today.
Okay. Before you jump ahead, Stuart, I wanted to give staff any opportunity to weigh in on that. Oh, and Randy.
Is your power purchase agreement through 2047, or when does that
it's
end?
It's 2037, correct. It's where that...
correct.
The red line starts to jump around. Okay, and so the red line beyond 2037 is reflected by anticipated market costs. And Randy can interject any other commentary on that.
So no, that's correct, Stuart.
2037.
Yep, 2037 is the PPA end date.
And how do you calculate an estimate for market costs of electricity in the 2040s?
What we use is the Wood McKinsey market forecasts, which is similar to what we use for our resource planning process.
Okay. Thank you.
So this is Victor with staff. I've been through, you know, this kind of ties in together a little bit with the next one we're going to talk about, but we're the idea of purchasing a PPA wind farm isn't something new in North Dakota, but the methodology here is a little bit different than we're used to. Xcel's been doing this for years, but we usually have an ADP proceeding to review it on. I've done a review similar to what we would do in one of those proceedings for this purchase. I agree with Otter Tail's assessment that it's more cost effective for customers to own it versus continue the PPA. The 25 versus 35 year life cycle thing is, they do have the data from the manufacturer and from Burns McDowell's study that supports the lifespan. Actually, I think the two things actually support a 40 year life, and they're playing a little bit safer going to 35. But I don't disagree that it hasn't, none of this has really been tested with this particular equipment in this particular location. So, it's something the commission should think about, I think. I don't have a reason to doubt that it will last that long, but it's just not something we've seen here before, and that's why I wanted to highlight that for you today. Other than that one concern, I don't have any other issues that I was able to find in my review of the job.
So, Victor, what do we do to mitigate that concern on the life of the blades? And calculate that in to the savings, you know?
Sure. Well, I mean, this isn't a one-and-done type of scenario. We don't have to set it at 35 years now and then live with this forever. If we have more information available in 5 years, 10 years, we can adjust it to be shorter. Or alternatively, if this commission would prefer, I think you could specify we are going to continue to use a 25-year lifespan until we have more information to push it out further. Either of those are completely realistic scenarios.
Does it change the calculation on the owning versus PPA, though?
It would change it. I mean, this would still be, the Attribute 3 would be, in my opinion, cost-effective, more cost-effective for customers than continuing the PPA in either scenario.
Even if the blades go out and they have to replace them?
Well, I guess depending on when. I mean, if they expire before the end of 25, then that's a real problem. But if they would be closer to the end of that lifespan. And, you know, I think what we've seen, in not necessarily in Otter Tail's farms, but in, you know, other wind farms around the state, it's not like it's a big rash that happens all at once. There's a constant operation and maintenance program, which they've tried to account mm-hmm. for, I think, in their assumptions. You know, looking at some of MDU's older wind farms, that's kind of around in the ballpark of what they're seeing. Generators and gearboxes are going out. I like this program where they're monitoring the blades on an annual basis. I think that's going to help prolong those lives because, as they said, that really is the big concern with the wind tower blades mm-hmm. is the leading edge is hitting everything, bald eagles and things like that, you know? No, never any bald
they're
eagles.
They're not allowed in wind farms.
Sparrows.
Bald eagles
sparrows,
aren't allowed
yeah.
there.
It's got to give them a hard time.
Can I weigh in just one moment just from the...
Of course, Bruce.
You know, just a couple perspectives that, you know, and I appreciate Victor bringing up that we have based our decisions based on engineering studies and the best available information that we have, and that we generally, that is how we rely on, what we rely on for any depreciable life decision is we generally look at what do engineers say, the major components, how long they'll last. So the methodology is the same we use in other facilities. The second thing is, we're a utility that wants to get the most life out of an investment. And so I hope, too, that our demonstrated ability to do that in other facilities is that's our MO, and that's what we commit to because it's cost-effective. So the longer that we can run those, the cheaper it is per kWh produced. And so it is our commitment. It's really part of our mission statement. So I just want to give you some assurance that that is our best belief, both at the engineering, within the engineering groups, and at the senior management level, is that we believe that this is the most reasonable expected life. Could be longer, could be shorter. And what happens with depreciable lives is, as Victor says, is as you get closer to what is the predicted end, you make more precise estimates. And depreciable, the way we do depreciation setting, there is an ability to change it in the future. But at each point, we should be deciding what is the most reasonable life at that point. And we believe it's 35 since their inception, so 25 remaining. Is that I just wanted to give you my commitment that is, has been considered by our executive team and again, mostly by the engineers who know these things.
So I'm always left wondering, and this isn't specific to Otter Tail either, because as someone mentioned, we've had kind of the same scenario play out with other utilities that enter these PPAs and then come in, and it's just such a open and door shut case. It's just so much better off to own it than to have the PPA. So where were the geniuses 10 years ago? Why didn't you just build one instead of doing a PPA on these?
Well, I think Commissioner. I think that partly it was what were the vendors permitting and offering. And so the people that were building, we weren't in a position, we didn't have the experience to construct the farms ourselves. So you typically had to work with a developer that was offering a PPA. And frankly, we were one of, I think, a few utilities that worked out the advantageous PPA with buyout option, which some utilities didn't get included in their PPA. This was a something we consciously negotiated for because of the perceived advantage. The end of life benefits of ownership is something we sort of know about with our PPAs, that the PPA vendor is going to get whatever value there is at the 25th year if we let them expire. This was something we consciously wanted, is not to allow those end of life benefits, you know, what would have been the end of the life of the PPA, be lost. So we always thought the option to purchase was a huge get in our transaction with ASH 3.
Thank you.
I hope that was helpful.
Mm-hmm. One other thing to kind of layer onto that. So thinking about from the developer perspective, their PPAs or PTCs are expiring at the end of year 10. So their costs go up, essentially. They don't have as much benefit to owning it. So they have an incentive to get rid of it. Otter Tail has an incentive to buy it. And I think it just kind of works out for everyone's benefit. And then we don't have to, you know, essentially pay their return as well. I mean, developers don't do these things for free, for the goodness of their heart, just like a utility generally doesn't do those things either.
Thanks.
Okay, this.
I think we're good.
Okay. So at this point, we'll transition to talking about our renewable rider filing that was part of case PU 22-19. And again, we're looking at this annual update, and we'll touch on the components here in just a little bit. But this is actually the 14th update to the renewable rider. As I mentioned earlier, we're looking at a reduction in the overall rate, dropping from 11.825% down to 7.108%. And the proposed recovery period would begin on April 1st of this year and run through the end of March of 2023. To give you a little bit more detail on the components of what's included in the rider, you know, we have true-up balances and associated carrying charges on those balances, and we'll go through all the details, the numbers here in a few slides. But you know, basically, what happens is when we set and update you know, this rider on an annual basis, we'll have actual information that we've accumulated over the prior year up through say the end of November. And then we'll have forecasted information going out and beyond through the end of the recovery period that we're seeking the rate to be set on. But then as we roll forward the next year, we replace that forecasted information with actual information, actual costs, you know, actual collections, you know, those kinds of things. And so that's what the true-up component is addressing, is changes that have occurred since last year's approval, okay? And so that's the main, you know, purpose of that particular component of our renewable rider. The second item, when we had our rate case, back in 2017, we had for our Langdon and Ashtabula wind farms, you know, they were generating production tax credits still at that point in time. And the way our renewable riders handled the production tax credits in those in you know, with those wind farms is in the years that those credits were generated, they were passed through to our customers. And so the customers received the benefits of those production tax credits, in a sense, kind of in real time each year. However, Otter Tail couldn't every year always utilize the production tax credits on the tax returns, and so any unused PTCs are booked as a tax asset, and it becomes part of rate base. In the last case, there was a certain amount of, you know, unused production tax credits that were part of rate base, included in base rates. And so part of the settlement coming out of that rate case is that as we actually utilized the PTCs and those balances came down, we would provide a true-up credit in the renewable rider for that change in the production tax credit balances and the return on. It's really the return on that piece of rate base. And so what you're going to see is there's credits in the renewable rider reflecting sort of that reduced return that we would be entitled to on those balances.
How does this relate to the Shookwook?
I don't believe this is related quite yet.
Yeah.
Now I'm confused. But all right, keep going. It'll make clear.
And actually, we did not use the Shookwook with Otter Tail Power. MDU was the only one who got the Shookwook.
Okay, but something similar, a levelized mechanism.
We did that, but that's not related to the ADIT.
Okay.
Yeah. This is just adjusting for a balance that customers are currently paying in base rates, but now that balance has reduced, and we're just giving them a credit for the delta of the rate base amount.
Got it.
But these PTCs were levelized.
Yeah.
But it was just newer at the time. Older.
Well,
at the time.
These PTCs were passed through to the customer in each year that they were generated. Okay. The Maricourt facility, those PTCs are being levelized now over the.
Because this one was too far along. We just left it. Got it.
Correct. The Langdon and.
The first Ashtabula.
Yes. Yep.
Got it.
Yeah, they were nearing the end of the first 10 years.
Yeah.
So. Third item, Maricourt, our Maricourt wind facility is included, as well as the PTCs, which are being levelized over the life of the project, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. But the depreciation expense on Maricourt has been reduced in this update to now reflect the 35-year depreciable life, which is about a $1.14 million reduction to the North Dakota. Rider, or that's the North Dakota share of that depreciation reduction. And then we've included in here, again, subject to contingent on acquisition approval, to begin recovery of Ashtabula 3, and that would be in the January, February, and March of 2023 timeframe. To talk a little bit about, the wind farm lives and extending them to 35 years. There was a case, in North Dakota way back in I think late 80s, and then in 1992 is amended, where, basically North Dakota has adopted the depreciation rulings and orders that we've achieved through our annual filings in Minnesota. And then the rates that are in lives that are set there are utilized across all of our jurisdictions so that there's a consistency. And so, based on that order, we make a compliance filing every year once that order is received in Minnesota. We make a filing in this 401-88-374 docket to provide updated depreciation information that would be applicable to North Dakota. And as I mentioned, South Dakota, they adopt the same depreciable lives as well. back in 2020 in our annual depreciation filing is when we had submitted the application to get approval of extending the lives of our wind farms from 25 to 35 years. And, you know, some primary factors that supported that request were related to, you know, engineering study. I think we referred to it a little earlier, you know, that supported potentially up to even a 40-year life, you know, for the Maricourt facility. There's been some other independent studies that have also supported longer lives. And then, you know, we've made some investments in certain life-extending technologies within our wind farms and you know, whether it's vibration monitoring systems, you know, lubrication systems for main bearings, and this bottom turbine controller cooling reservoir. These are things Harvey can address if you have further technical questions on them. But, you know, we're making investments to, you know, monitor our systems and try to identify early on if there are any issues that need to be addressed before catastrophic failure. In any case, you know, following the commission review and life extensions that they approved in their order back in April of last year, you know, we did provide our compliance filing, submitting that information, you know, here to the commission back in June of last year. So that's kind of the background on the 35-year life request. Any questions on that?
Where did you get the main bearing automatic lubrication systems? Because I'd like to find one for myself.
You have to talk to Harvey
that
on
a
that
nice
one.
Life extending equipment to own.
For all the whole body meat.
See, moving right along.
Moving on to page 18.
At least we're off that whole gas issue.
Randy was retaining gas. Oh, we have digressed. I'm so sorry, Stuart.
Yeah, that's all right. I talked earlier about, you know, the credits that would be rolling through with the true-up on the deferred tax assets for Langdon and Ashtabula, and you'll see the about $237,000 attributable to Langdon, another $963,000 attributable to Ashtabula. You know, the bulk of the revenue requirement is, you know, with the current Maricourt wind farm that's being included. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the Ashtabula 3 facility, assuming approval, would seek recovery beginning in January. So that would be the first 3 months of 2023 for recovery of that. So that's sort of the gross revenue requirement. And then we talked earlier about a true-up in carrying charges and ultimately getting to our net revenue requirement of about $7.8 million. You know, there is about a $2.1 million true-up credit this year. Now, a big part of that is from renewable energy credit sales that we had back in 2021 of about $1.15 million. I know in the application, I think we had said that number was about $200,000 less than this, and there was a typo. The numbers are right, it was just in the application. We had not included a $200,000 rec sale that had occurred in January of 2021. So the $1.15 million is the right number. as part of the true up. And then there's lower as we talked about, lower depreciation and levelized PTC credits. You know, with the life extension, you're going to see a reduction in depreciation expense. The PTCs being spread over the life, so the credit that's associated with those is also lower going forward. But net effect, it's about on the true up, it's about $840,000. And then, you know, other collections and updates, deviations make up the balance of the true-up amount. So overall revenue requirement is about $7.825 million. If we go on to slide 20, yep. And the rate design for, you know, for this rider is a percent of bill, and so we look at the forecasted base sales that we're anticipating over the recovery period at about $110 million. So it equates to a percentage of about 7.108 would be the rider rate. And for a customer using about 1,000 kilowatt hours a month, they would see a decrease of approximately $3.23.
So what does the average customer bill show for a charge for this renewable rider after this?
Well, yeah, I mean, if it's a $100 bill, $7. Be a little
bit.
Yeah, it might be a little bit less because it's on the base. It's on the base rate. I'm sorry.
Right now, this rider would be about $10 for that customer, and this brings it down to $7.
Yeah.
What's your average usage for a customer? What's the average use? You say the.
It. For a residential customer, I don't know offhand. We generally will use just a thousand as a proxy. It might be a little bit less than this on average, but we have a lot of demand response in North Dakota too, a lot of controllable load when needed. So just to recap again, our request, we're seeking recovery of the acquisition of the Ashtabula 3 within the rider, assuming approval of that acquisition. We're asking approval on the revenue requirement, the $7.8 million, and adjusting the rate down to the 7.108% effective April 1, 2022.
And we've discussed this in a number of other cases, and we're not cutting it quite as close, but we're not far off. What's the time frame? Let's say we were to approve this just as you've requested.
Mm-hmm.
What's the time frame you need that by in order to have this start on your April 1st billing?
Usually within, a week, before.
So we'd need this in about the next 4 weeks.
Yeah.
The notice period for these two cases expires March 18th, and the next commission meeting following that. And that's a good point you bring up, Commissioner Christman. That's an important factor. Commission meeting on March 30th is the next meeting after this.
Yeah, I was just checking if we had it on the 23rd, and I don't see one.
No. So looks like that's one of those three-week gaps in commission meetings for some reason.
Yeah.
So in order to even do this, as you're proposing, it would probably take a special meeting. Just that's not so much your concern as ours and staff, I guess.
Sure.
If you can find out and let me know when your kind of drop dead date would be.
Yep.
That you need to know one way or the other.
Yep. We can certainly do that.
And I can kind of work with the commissioners.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any other questions on this one, on this case? You guys, anything more to add, Victor?
I don't have anything additional. You know, kind of similar. You know, the bigger piece here is the Ashtabula being added in. Granted, it's only 3 months worth of revenue requirement because it doesn't happen until 2023. Mm-hmm. But we have the similar 25-year, 35-year life change for Maricourt. You know, same kind of parameters.
So I'm assuming, looking ahead to next year, with more of the Ashtabula costs, this is going to jump up. Because you'll have Maricourt and Ashtabula.
Yeah.
For Maricourt. No, for
Ashtabula.
For Ashtabula.
Yep.
Okay.
So from a bill, from a customer bill impact, balance. You're going to have some offsets going on there. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. All right, and Victor, anything more to add from staff side about the 25 to 35 year?
I don't have anything to add. I think Bruce did a really nice job of kind of summarizing the good options available to the commission if you continue to have a concern.
Sure.
Of extending that life.
Okay.
But no, I have nothing else to add. Thank you.
All right. Well, then I think that we're dealing with these two cases separately. So. Do my colleagues have any other questions? No, you're still writing.
I do not have any other questions, sir.
Okay. All right. Then, let's see here. I'm just going to look to make sure I didn't do anything. Do the parties have any objections to everything that was provided today, including the transcript and the handouts being included as part of the official record on which we will make a decision?
No objection.
No objection.
All right, then that's what will happen. All right, if there's nothing else to the matter, then these two cases are closed. Thank you. And then we'll stop this one and start a new one for the next case.